the end of this month and most of next month is normally one of the busiest parts of my calendar. I'm usually getting ramped up right now, visiting with area middle school and high school classes in an attempt to recruit kids to want to apply for our two summer camps. With the schools having been shut down for the rest of the year, combined with an uncertain future about travel into and around the area, those recruiting efforts are on hold for the moment. Will we even have our camps? It's too soon to say, though it's likely they'll be in an altered form if they happen at all. The other part of me being busy at this time of year is, or was, also tied to schools being open. I normally get a fair amount of calls for visits to classes about a wide range of teacher-requested topics. In the case of one particular Dillingham kindergarten class, they normally take a field trip to my office, so I'll miss out on that this year. And perhaps the biggest omission for this May is realizing that the annual Dillingham Elementary School 4th grade bird walk won't be happening, possibly the first such interruption in its 35-year history. While I understand the reasons why, and support them, it still makes me sad. Unlike the bird walk and its participants, however, our area's birds will be flooding back very soon, and some already have. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I have heard rumors of a smattering of folks seeing, hearing, and shooting speckle bellies, that is, white-fronted geese, and a few ducks. So for migratory bird hunters, that's good news, though it's likely we're a couple of weeks away from really being in the thick of it. I heard some gulls overhead when I took the trash cans to the curb, so to speak, on Tuesday. Fact is, the snow is going fast, higher temperatures are coming on, and the migratory birds will be coming with them. I tried to find something reputable online that gave some solid data for which migratory birds come back first to our area, but I came up empty. In terms of waterfowl, it seems to me that pintails don't waste a lot of time coming back, but that's just conjecture. From a songbird standpoint, it seems like I always notice the robins and varied thrushes first, even as snow is still in the yard, though that's also just anecdotal. For the purposes of today's episode, let's talk about robins, considered in many places to be a true harbinger of spring. My earliest memories as a child of a bird species that I could identify are of the American robin. In the spring, summer, and fall, central Kansas is simply overrun with them. It's likely it's one of the most easily recognized bird species anywhere, and not a lot of people don't know what they look like. Robins are fairly large as songbirds go, with a round body, long legs, and relatively long tail. They belong to the thrush family and weigh in as the largest of North America's thrushes. They're about 9 to 10 inches in length and sport a wingspan of about 16 inches. Perhaps the most noticeable feature is their breast, which runs from a medium orange to a very vibrant orange-red. The upper part of the body, wings, and head are all gray. On a male, the head can look dark gray to black. The eye is brown and is circled by an uneven ring of white. The throat is streaked with light vertical bars, and the bill ranges from yellow to brown. The underside of the tail is white, and the legs are grayish in color. Juveniles look similar, though their breast isn't very bright and is covered in patches of white with dark spots. Robins are common across the entirety of our continent, with the exception of extreme northern areas of Alaska and Canada. They can be found any place you'd think to look for them, including yards, gardens, city parks, fields, pastures, open tundra, mountainous areas, deciduous woodlands, and coniferous forest. Again, pretty much anywhere. They are equally at home in the city and in the wild. During winter, many robins transition from open spaces to more wooded areas where berry-producing trees and bushes can be found. One possible reason for why robins seem to have a strong foothold virtually everywhere is the fact that they are prolific breeders. A female robin can produce up to 3 successful broods per year. They do have a high mortality rate. Only about 25% or so of fledged young survive until winter. In the wild, robins can live for up to 14 years, though half that is probably a more realistic average. Nest sites are chosen by the female, and the nest itself is built by the female as well. It's built from the inside out, pressing dead grass and twigs into a cup shape, often at a point where two branches come together. Many materials can be used to construct the nest, including paper, feathers, roots, moss. Once the cup is formed, mud is gathered and added to strengthen the nest. The finishing touch is to line the nest with fine, soft grasses. The finished nest is about 6 to 8 inches across and several inches high. While I grew up spotting nests in deciduous trees such as elm, back in Kansas, robins are adaptable in choosing nesting sites. Man-made structures such as outdoor light fixtures and rain gutters are sometimes used. A typical clutch size is 3 to 5 eggs. The eggs are small, at a little over an inch long, and a very distinct color of solid bluish-green. How distinct is it? Well, consider. Crayola Crayons has a color in their big set of crayons called Robin's Egg Blue. Incubation is done by the female and lasts for about 2 weeks. The chicks are naked at birth and have their eyes closed. They grow quickly and leave the nest after about 2 weeks. The juveniles are able to fly 2 weeks after fledging. Both the male and female share in the responsibility of feeding and protecting the chicks. The typical robin diet is a mixture of invertebrates and fruit. In the spring and summer, they eat large numbers of earthworms, insects, and snails. As summer and fall wear on, they also eat a wide variety of wild fruits. Sometimes they manage to hit on both at the same time. One study found evidence that robins sometimes selectively target fruits that have insects in them. They have also been seen to target specific foods during different parts of the day, with insects and worms being sought out in the morning, and fruits more so in the later part of the day. Robins are called ground foragers. That is, they search for their food while on the ground. If you've ever watched a robin looking for food, you know what I mean. They run a few steps and then abruptly stop. It almost seems like they're listening to the ground while looking for food, as they can often be seen cocking their heads to the side when they come to a stop. While it might look like they're listening, biologists believe they actually find their food by sight. In the case of worms, they're watching for signs of digging. As a songbird, they're often the prey species for any number of predators across North America. Adults are preyed on by hawks, falcons, cats, both domestic and wild, and larger snakes. They do find some protection when feeding in flocks, whereas more eyes are available to spot any potential danger. Juveniles and eggs also come under threat from squirrels and other birds, such as blue jays, grackles, crows, and ravens. Honestly, just about any type of predator you can think of would potentially make a meal of a robin, given the opportunity. I mentioned that the robin is often considered a harbinger of spring, which is a reason for why they are the topic of today's show. There are several poems that include robins in them, poems that join this species and spring together. One well-known example is by poet Emily Dickinson and is titled, "I Dreaded That First Robin So." The first four lines are as follows. "I dreaded that first robin so, but he is mastered now. I am accustomed to him grown. He hurts a little, though." I believe Miss Dickinson saw something dark and mysterious in the appearance of that first robin, as well as several other signs of spring that followed. While I don't pretend to know her reasons for penning that particular poem, or mindset on robins for that matter, on a personal level, I would have to agree with her about that first robin being a gloomy sign. For those who are at the cusp of shedding tears of joy over spring almost being here, well, for me it's just the opposite. Is there a sign that another winter is over? When those first robins show up in my yard, I know another winter has come and gone, and it's just about time, or maybe even a little past time, to put away the snow machines again. For those of you who prefer spring over winter, enjoy your time. It's just about here once again. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.